Welcome back to The Curious Clinicians, a medical podcast that asks why. I'm Tony Brew, and I'm joined as always by Hannah Abrams and Avi Cooper. Hannah, how you doing? On call, as always?
What?
Are you on call?
I am on call.
You are perennially on call, Hannah.
How did you guess?
Yeah, I can see the terror in your eyes and the pager close
to it's not
hand.
Like you're a first-year fellow.
Who could say? It's just behind the mic. So if anyone hears anything during this episode, that's why.
And Avi, are you on call?
Not this evening, no.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of, unless we get some surprises while we record tonight. But.
Yeah, so only one of us should get paged this evening. Hopefully none of us get paged. But
that's great thinking.
Yeah, exactly. But on this episode, we are going to tackle something other than paging. And it's actually a topic that Avi and I have actually both independently investigated and discussed on Twitter/X. And so it'll be interesting to see a little bit about, you know, the kind of stuff that he found and that I found. And the topic generally relates to alcohol and the physiologic effects of alcohol. And that's something we've discussed on the podcast before. So on episode 75, we talked about why drinking alcohol can make you feel warm and generate a burning sensation when it's swallowed. And then on episode 37, we talked about how alcohol causes polyuria. Tonight, though, we're going to tackle something that comes up more often in the inpatient setting, although certainly shows up in clinic as well, and it's something you see when you're checking labs. And the topic is why chronic alcohol use can lead to macrocytosis, or an enlargement of the red blood cells. And this is definitely something that's easy to breeze past when scanning over a patient's labs, but the association is real. And I think after talking about it tonight, it's probably something that people are going to see more and identify more than, you know, maybe before they heard this.
Yeah, I totally agree, Tony. It's so easy to see, I think, a mild macrocytosis on someone's complete blood count or their CBC. Know that they're perhaps a daily drinker or have some sort of alcohol dependence. And sort of just say to yourself, yep, that's probably why they're macrocytic, and then just move on with your day. But there is something physiologic happening here. So why would alcohol do this to our red blood cells? Like, why would it make them grow physically in size?
So I think I'm the one on tap to define macrocytosis. And obviously the simple definition is macro, large, cytosis, cells existing. And I'll say what number pops up as red may depend on your specific lab, but generally we think of macrocytosis as being a mean corpuscular volume, or MCV, between greater than 96 to 100 femtoliters. And I'll say three digits is a reasonable cutoff. Remember that red blood cells are really, really tiny, even when they are enlarged. And, you know, this is incredible. I don't think we think a lot about how big a femtoliter or how big a macrocytic red blood cell is. But a femtoliter equates to 10 to the negative 15th liters. So it's a tiny, tiny unit of volume, that tiny cell. And it's still quite small, even though it's large. And the sort of comparison is microcytosis, or smaller than normal red blood cells, which can be caused by iron deficiency, thalassemia, etc.
Yeah, I mean, 10 to the negative 15th, this is how we can fit trillions of these in our bodies. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, so as you said, Hannah, you know, when we think about microcytosis, we think about iron deficiency, thalassemia. It's probably helpful to think a little bit about, you know, how commonly does alcohol cause macrocytosis? And, you know, the study that I often mention to house staff, it's a little bit older. It's from the year 2000, but it looked at 300 consecutive hospitalized patients with an MCV greater than 100. And medications were the identified cause of macrocytosis in 37% of the cases. But this was followed by alcohol-related liver disease with 13% of the cases, and alcohol consumption without liver disease also at 13%. And there were a few other conditions in this study that caused macrocytosis, including, you know, B12 and folate deficiencies, myelodysplasia, and reticulocytosis. But again, about 25%, a quarter of the patients, had alcohol is at least partly the cause, which is, you know, a pretty high number. So I guess turning back to you, Avi, when was it first observed that heavy sustained alcohol use can cause this this finding, this macrocytosis?
You know, actually less than 100 years ago. And although at the focus at the time, it was less on alcohol use than on the liver disease that the alcohol use had led to. But clinicians at Johns Hopkins noted in the early 1930s that many patients who were admitted to their hospital with alcohol-related liver disease had macrocytic anemia. And they made a connection between macrocytosis and liver disease. Now, that, you know, that is a valid association. Chronic liver disease of any kind can lead to growth of red blood cells in size, probably because of changes in things like membrane cholesterol composition. But independent of liver disease, heavy alcohol consumption on its own can lead to macrocytosis. And, you know, there was a 2001 study from Japan published in the Journal of Laboratory and Clinical Medicine that studied the red blood cell size of patients with various types of liver disease. Of those with alcohol-related liver disease, they found that red blood cell size increased linearly with higher amounts of daily alcohol intake. So that really, you know, sort of almost like a dose response and between alcohol and red blood cell size. So it really seemed to be a valid association.
The fascinating thing to me about macrocytosis with alcohol use is the fact that it is not a megaloblastic anemia, which I know we're going to talk about a little bit more, things that intersect with this that can cause megaloblastic anemia. I've always wondered this, and I've never totally understood it. And Avi, I feel like you've got a really great explanation for us today of how this could be independent of megaloblastic change. So I'll say, what is the mechanism by which alcohol consumption specifically could enlarge RBCs? Is it directly on the cell since it's not megaloblastic? And I'll also clarify that when we talk about alcohol, just in case anyone wants to be really specific, seems like we're specifically referencing ethanol.
Yeah,
is that right?
Ethanol specifically. And I shared the assumption that you know that you had that alcohol or ethanol was having some sort of direct effect on the red blood cell, but that may not actually be the case. So I came across a 1993 study that involved incubation of human myeloid or lymphoid cells in culture with ethanol for up to a week. And this had no effect whatsoever on cell size. It's not definitive, but it suggested that alcohol itself doesn't directly cause macrocytosis. In the same experiment, though, when they incubated leukocytes with acetaldehyde, which is a byproduct, sort of a downstream byproduct of ethanol metabolism in the liver and also the gut by alcohol dehydrogenase, the leukocytes did grow in size. So perhaps there's a clue.
Yeah, I came across the same study when I was looking into this, and I found it absolutely fascinating. And it, and just as you said, it's sort of this indirect proof that that there's something going on. And it's indirect in that it's not red blood cells, it's white blood cells. It also is fascinating because it suggests that acetaldehyde, a product of ethanol metabolism, as you said, is the cause of the increase in cell size and not the ethanol itself. And so the question becomes, if acetaldehyde is indeed the culprit, what was the sense that you came across for the mechanism or mechanisms?
Yeah. And, you know, I know, I think you and I sort of both were looking at some of the similar studies that there's probably two mechanisms, right? The first is altered red blood cell membrane and cytoskeletal composition. And the second, and this one was sort of really surprising for me, was fluid shifts.
All right. Well, we got to start with the bones of the cell. Can we start with how acetaldehyde can change the composition of the cell membrane and cytoskeleton?
So apparently acetaldehyde can cause cross-linking and clumping of cytoskeletal proteins, such as actin and spectrin, within the red blood cell by physically binding to them. You know, this then leads to the formation of these large protein clumps that essentially create sort of a dysfunctional cytoskeleton inside the red blood cell. Then this is like totally probably not a valid sort of visualization, but I almost imagine, like, do you remember those like Lincoln Logs and or Kinects and those sort of things, and like sticking like chewing gum on them and just causing them to, like, you know, not interlock correctly? That was like sort of how I imagine this, but. You know, these protein acetaldehyde adduct clumps, they've actually been visualized inside the membranes of macrocytic red blood cells that have been taken from users of chronic excessive alcohol users. And I came across this really cool study from 2001 in Molecular Medicine, where the researchers examined the peripheral red blood cells of 138 patients undergoing a macrocytic evaluation. Like, they were being worked up for why it was there. And about half of them had a history of excessive alcohol use and half did not. So when they stain the red blood cell membrane with a immunohistochemical stain that binds to acetaldehyde, the red blood cells from chronic alcohol drinkers, they like lit up. You know, their membranes were just full of acetaldehyde, whereas the non-alcohol users had no acetaldehyde in their membranes whatsoever. So they then used chromatography to like separate out the proteins from these red blood cells. And they found that the red blood cells from alcohol users, they had all this acetaldehyde sort of bound up to the proteins. And so, you know, probably what's happening is it's binding to lots of different types of proteins in the cell, but the cytoskeletal proteins seem to be, you know, one of those proteins it's binding to.
Okay, so now I'm picturing Lincoln Logs and bubblegum, and I can certainly imagine an acetaldehyde, you know, Lincoln Log maybe. Or no, actually, I guess the cytoskeleton would be the Lincoln Log and acetaldehyde would be the bubblegum.
That's it.
That's whatever it is, it's happening. But take it a step further, how is this leading to an increase in the size of the red blood cell? And because this is not one of the mechanisms that I ended up reading a lot about.
Yeah, you know, a cell's cytoskeleton attaches to the cellular membrane, and it affects both its size and its shape. And if you look at like videos and graphics of what the cytoskeleton actually looks like, it's this super active, dynamic thing that just gives their cells structure and flexibility. I feel like I, from medical school, college biology, had this like static scaffolding sort of picture, you know, like the stuff that goes up, you know, outside buildings and stuff like that and construction. But with acetaldehyde, when it binds to these really like flexible dynamic cytoskeletal proteins, it sort of just causes them to like stop working correctly and they gum up. And then that seems to change the size and shape of the red blood cell and somehow make it bigger.
That's so interesting. And kind of to compare it, by comparison, hereditary spherocytosis is like those proteins themselves are deformed. So it's almost like then you get a different shape. Whereas this is because it's dynamically incorporating all of these bits of gum, the shape can change and it gets bigger instead of changes in shape. So that's so interesting. We have established that chronic excessive alcohol use is probably the cause of these acetaldehyde cytoskeleton protein adducts. And then that probably is a cause for red blood cell macrocytosis. You also mentioned fluid shifts, and I wouldn't have anticipated that or don't have a great framework for understanding how that would work. What's the story there?
Yeah, I was really surprised. It does seem that osmotic shifts lead to changes in cellular volume, and that may play a role. So, to understand this osmotic mechanism, we need to first review how a red blood cell maintains normal fluid balance because it's got a semi-permeable membrane. It has to. I was shocked when I first learned this that, but did either of you know before sort of seeing this topic that red blood cell membranes have furosemide or LASIK sensitive sodium potassium chloride membrane co-transporters? Like the same transporters like in the loop of Henle in the kidney.
Not before I read about this. This is not something.
Nephrologists are at it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't.
Diurese the red blood cell. You don't do that.
Why wouldn't
rounds.
You? Yes, yes.
Get a half a centiliter out of it.
But it amazingly, it seems that this sodium potassium chloride membrane co-transporter, it functions as sort of like a check or a buffer against shrinkage of the cell from osmotic shifts because it allows osmotically active sodium ions to enter the red blood cell. And actually treating red blood cells with furosemide can actually impair that process. And so, apparently this type of electrolyte co-transport, it's almost ubiquitous actually in all cell types in animals, even though I feel like in like med school, like we really just learned about it in the kidney, in the loop of Henle, and maybe in the ears. But like they're sort of, these co-transporters are really everywhere.
Yeah, this mechanism is the one that I had come across, and I think it's absolutely incredible. But I need a little reminding because it's been a while since I wrote the tutorial. So you gotta like refresh my memory. How does alcohol kind of affect this electrolyte equilibrium, this furosemide membrane co-transporter? Furosemide sensitive.
Yes. Well, apparently it probably comes back to acetaldehyde too. There's evidence that acetaldehyde, it can stimulate the sodium potassium chloride co-transporter, sort of the opposite of the effect of furosemide. And so if something stimulated the sodium potassium chloride co-transporter on red blood cell, what do you think would happen to the cell size?
Would it become macrocytic?
Mayhaps, yes, exactly, exactly. So, stimulating the sodium potassium chloride co-transporter, you'd get more sodium influx, the cell swells, it grows in size. I came across this really cool experiment from 1988. It was published in the journal Gastroenterology, where the experimenters, they took isolated live rat livers and perfused them with either ethanol or acetaldehyde. And basically, you know, they were using the liver as like, you know, it has alcohol dehydrogenase, right? And so they were using the liver as a way to metabolize the alcohol to sort of stimulate what happens, you know, in an actual body. And so both chemicals led to cell swelling by about 9% in size based on like water volume inside the hepatocytes. But when the ethanol was combined with an inhibitor of alcohol dehydrogenase called methylpyrazole, which if you, with this medication, chemical that's going to block the production of acetaldehyde, no cell swelling occurred. So it really was able to sort of isolate what is happening with alcohol metabolism.
We really keep coming down to this idea that ethanol, you know, ethanol itself can be toxic, but acetaldehyde really seems to be the main player here in each of the two mechanisms that you've described.
Can I ask, is this the reason that the liver swells in alcohol-related hepatitis, in acute alcohol-related hepatitis? Do you guys know?
I've assumed that's more inflammatory in nature.
Yeah, and capillary permeability and stuff.
This mechanism. Yeah.
It's an interesting question, though.
I'm not sure.
But I think one of the other interesting things too here that, you know, occurred to me is like both of these mechanisms, one is a gain of function, one is a loss of function. It's really interesting. It's sort of both of those are happening simultaneously, right? Like the cytoskeletal effects are a loss of function and the sodium potassium chloride cotransporter stimulation, that's a gain of function. So it's really two different mechanisms conspiring to cause this. Yeah, but I found based on that same experiment from 1988, the rat liver experiment, when they mixed either ethanol or acetaldehyde with bumetanide or Bumex, right, which is a loop diuretic that inhibits the sodium potassium chloride cotransporter, this also completely blocked and prevented any cell swelling. So again, acknowledging the caveat that this was an experiment in rat livers, not human red blood cells, if you put it all together, it really did suggest that acetaldehyde can cause cellular swelling because of electrolyte transport across the membranes. And they really were able to isolate both pieces of that question. Is it acetaldehyde? And is it in having something to do with osmotic shifts? But Tony, I know you research this topic a lot as well, extensively. Did you find any other interesting stuff that you can teach us?
Well, the thing that I found interesting is that the idea that acetaldehyde is kind of the main player here is supported by the associations between macrocytosis and alcohol-mediated flushing and macrocytosis and esophageal cancer. So, you know, I think we know and remind the audience that alcohol-mediated flushing is definitely from actually not alcohol, but acetaldehyde. And those who drink alcohol and have macrocytosis are more likely to have alcohol-mediated flushing. There seems to be a connection there suggesting acetaldehyde is causing both. And similarly, acetaldehyde is a known carcinogen and has been implicated in esophageal cancer, particularly in Asian populations. And macrocytosis is a marker for increased risk of esophageal cancer in those who consume alcohol. So it kind of all kind of, this is, you know, again, not direct evidence that acetaldehyde is causing the macrocytosis, but I think alongside the physiologic studies that Avi has kind of reviewed for us, it strongly implicates that metabolite and not the ethanol itself.
It's really a bad actor.
Yeah, it is.
I can't wait to tell everybody who consults me for anemia in the next 3 months about this. I'm so excited. Okay, so to summarize what I'm going to be saying on the phone, it sounds like acetaldehyde can cause macrocytosis with two theorized mechanisms, one being those cytoskeletal adducts and how they, and the other being impact on electrolyte transit across the cellular membranes and the resulting osmotic shifts. One last thing that I did wonder is whether alcohol could also increase a different type of large red blood cell, which is reticulocytes, as a way of contributing to macrocytosis, maybe some, I don't know, inflammatory response prompting bone marrow activity. But I'll say that doesn't totally line up with what we see, which is mild anemia. And it turns out that the opposite is really true, which is that alcohol tends to lower reticulocyte counts because of sideroblastic changes in red blood cells. So in the end, it all comes back not really to the alcohol, it seems like, but acetaldehyde, this alcohol metabolite. In addition, probably, Tony, like you referenced, to things like B12 and folate deficiencies or coexistent liver disease. So, Avi, thank you for expanding our knowledge on this fantastic subject. Can you give us your take-home points?
So my take-home points would be that alcohol-induced chronic macrocytosis is mediated primarily by acetaldehyde as an alcohol metabolite, in addition to things like folate or B12 deficiency and liver disease, if those are present, but not related to direct effects of the ethanol itself on the red blood cell. And the two sort of purported main mechanisms seem to involve both gain of function and loss of function. The gain of function element is stimulation of red blood cell sodium potassium chloride membrane cotransporters, which leads to sodium influx and cell swelling. And the loss of function component has to do with altered membrane shape and composition by cross-linking cytoskeletal proteins, like gum on an erector set.
You're kind of ruining my next experience with Lincoln Logs with the kids, but that's okay. Actually, they'll just have to sort of listen to me as I explain to them the mechanism of macrocytosis in chronic alcohol use. But until then, that wraps up another episode of The Curious Clinicians. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Claire Morgan of NotEarly.com is our audio editor, and Giancarlo Bonomo is our producer. You can join our mailing list at CuriousClinicians.com to stay up to date on episode releases and have detailed notes delivered directly to your inbox. You can just subscribe to our Substack at TheCuriousClinicians.substack.com. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn CME and MOC credits from VCU Health just for listening to this episode. For more information, visit ce.vcuhealth.org/curiousclinicians. And as always, the information contained in this episode is for educational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute medical advice. Until next time, we've been The Curious Clinicians.